What's wrong?
Never mind. Never mind.
You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
My name is Tom Cranker, and I'm a jolly banker. I'm a jolly banker am I. I safeguard the farmers and widows and orphans, singing, I'm a jolly banker am I.
Was there some enterprising bankers way back when that found some other ways to scam the people? I mean, is this also what it says in Scripture about having unfair scales or balances?
Mm-hmm.
Can you trace back where these enterprising people say, listen, we can do a little sleight of hand here?
Well, we could trace it back to the Bible and Jesus and the temple and the money changers, right? Here's a group of people that you have to pay your temple dues to get in and do your worship with this particular coin of the realm. And so travelers that came from other places didn't have that coin of the realm. And so a transfer was required. You know, you had to pay with your money to get that money. And that was really the first place where chicanery came to be. The idea that, okay, the exchange rate might be 4-1 for your money for my money, but yet because you need it and you're standing here, your desire is great and I have it, I'm going to charge you 8-1 or 10-1. And that really was probably the first chicanery, if you will, that allowed the defrauding of regular working people, non-banking people, by the banking community.
When you're poor, you're losing, and sadly you're cruising, I'm a jolly banker, am I? I'll come and foreclose, get your car and your clothes, singing, I'm a jolly banker, am I?
You know, Jesus Christ could raise the dead, heal sick, cast out demons, change water into wine.
Walk on water. He could do all of that and never have a problem.
Right, but 3 days after he chases the bankers out, he's before Pilate.
Exactly. So yeah. It's like, you know, you can do anything you want, but boy, don't mess with the money. And I think that was the lesson that came from that whole episode.
When the landlords abuse you, or sadly misuse you, I'm a jolly banker, am I?
The Rothschilds bought controlling interest in England's British East India Shipping Company and the illegal opium trade with China. They offered junior partnerships to New England's leading American families. The Russell, Coolidge, Delano, Forbes, and Perkins families became fabulously rich, smuggling opium aboard their speedy clipper ships into China. In 1820, Samuel Russell bought out the Perkins Syndicate and ran the opium smuggling operation with his partner, Warren Delano Jr., who was the grandfather of President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Rothschild.
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 The Russell family, who controlled the U.S. arm of the Rothschild drug smuggling operations, set up the Skull and Bones fraternity at Yale University. America's big money families formed the fraternity's inner power circle. Taft, Russell, Schiff, Harriman, Bush, Warburg, Guggenheim, Rockefeller, Stimson, Weyhauser, Vanderbilt, Goodyear, and Pillsbury were all members. These families intermarried over the generations to form America's big money aristocracy. Skull and Bones member Alfonso Taft catapulted his son, William Taft, right into the top job at the White House. President Taft's 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution guaranteed the right of big money insiders to hand-pick senators and buy control of the United States Senate. Today, the most influential members of the CIA, the U.S. government, and big finance are Skull and Bonesman.
Rothschild.
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 They finance Cecil Rhodes, making it possible for him to establish a monopoly over the diamond and gold fields of South Africa. In America, they financed the Harrimans and railroads, the Vanderbilts and railroads and the press, and Carnegie in the steel industry, among many others. In fact, during World War I, J.P. Morgan was thought to be the richest man in America. But after his death, it was discovered that he was actually only a lieutenant of the Rothschilds. Once Morgan's will was made public, it was discovered that he owned only 19% of J.P. Morgan companies.
Leopold and Nathaniel Rothschild became the next generation of godfathers to take charge of the family fortune. They were like the Parker brothers of Monopoly, and they played the game like they invented it. The brothers were the world champions, and that's because they knew the secret to winning. The secret to winning was to cheat, and the best way to cheat was to become the banker and rewrite the rules. So that's exactly what they did. Since the U.S. Congress was already in charge of the rules and the Federal Reserve Bank, winning the U.S. version of Monopoly meant they would have to outsmart Congress. So they sent Jacob Schiff, their trusted lifelong friend and neighbor from Frankfurt, Germany, to New York City, and they put him in charge of their friend company called Kuhn and Loeb. Then they ganged up with other big players by investing in Rockefeller Oil, Harriman Railroads, Carnegie Steel, and Brown Brothers Investment Banking. By 1901, the Rothschilds had amassed $22.2 billion in U.S. assets. The mayor of New York, John Hyland, called them the invisible government, while Congressman Louis McFadden called them a dark crew of financial pirates who would slit a man's throat to get a dollar. When Woodrow Wilson became president of the United States in 1912, he sold out America. Wilson was backed by Jacob Schiff and Paul Warburg, who worked in the United States as German immigrant agents for the Rothschilds. In 1913, Paul Warburg rewrote the U.S. monopoly rules with the help of Senator Nelson Aldrich. They called the new rules the Federal Reserve Act. With President Woodrow Wilson's blessing, the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank became a privately owned central bank, free of government control. The pirates divvied up the private stock in America's money supply and made Rothschild agent Paul Warburg head of the U.S. Federal Reserve. To collect their bounty, they also created the Income Tax Act and the hated IRS. With the stroke of President Wilson's treasonous pen, the banker gangsters became the Fed in 1913 and have owned a virtual monopoly over the U.S. economy and the taxpayers' money ever since. They can print money out of thin air, control treasury loans, and profit from interest rates. Since their biggest windfalls come from loan profits and weapon sales, wars and death are not only profitable, they're desirable and necessary. Today, American citizens owe these merchants of death approximately $70,000 per citizen.
It is now known that the original Federal Reserve Board was handpicked by Colonel Edward Mandel House, who early in his career had represented British and American banking interests. The intimate papers of Colonel House, edited by Charles Seymour, reveal House as the unseen guardian angel of the Federal Reserve System. In the words of Mr. Seymour, the Schiffs, the Warburgs, the Kahns, the Rockefellers, and the Morgans had faith in House. In 1912, Colonel House authored this book entitled Philip Drew, Administrator. The hero, a thinly disguised version of himself in real life, was a behind-the-scenes manipulator of prominent political figures. In the disguised form of a novel, the book lays bare the general strategy that has been followed ever since, even to the very present. It tells of how a small group of insiders cause a depression and then bring about the election of a man named Rockland. Rockland gives fireside chats and launches a program called the New Era to strengthen government control over the masses. Eventually, the insiders who control the government weaken the country deliberately to the point of civil war, which provides them with the excuse for establishing a dictatorship under Philip Drew. Colonel House was the man who selected Woodrow Wilson as a presidential candidate and later became his principal advisor. Wilson was totally dependent on House for all political decisions. He was his alter ego. The president himself had written, "Mr. House is my second personality. He is my independent self. His thoughts and mine are one. If I were in his place, I would do just as he suggested."
You know, if you look, but it's not just him, you know, look at Louis T. McFadden, a congressman in the 30s, or Charles Lindbergh Sr., you know, the aviator's father, who was also a congressman. Both of these guys, when the Federal Reserve Act was being enacted, and then again when the Federal Reserve bankrupted the country in 1933, both of them pointed their fingers squarely on those to blame and were demonized by the media, and both, in fact, met an untimely death.
As far back as 1907, Trotsky was financed by British bankers. By 1917, the major financing for the communist revolution in Russia was coming through Lord Alfred Milner, the leader of that inner core within the roundtable groups and the CFR. In America, Jacob Schiff of Kuhn, Loeb & Company gave $20 million to Trotsky. From Germany, millions more came from Max Warburg. The communist movement, not only in the United States, but around the world, always has been financed by the international banking establishment. Dr. Quigley explains why the establishment has never greatly worried about the communist movement in America. He says, "It must be recognized that the power that these energetic left-wingers exercised was never their own power or communist power, but was ultimately the power of the international financial coterie."
Between 1918 and 1921, 14 million Russians died from war and starvation under Lenin's Bolsheviks. By 1919, Lenin ran up a national debt to the Rothschild banksters of $60 billion, which put Russia firmly under their control. As Mayor Rothschild once said, "Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes her laws." To this day, the Rothschilds have stopped the heirs to the Tsar's fortunes from claiming their deposits held in Rothschild banks. Those fortunes are now worth an estimated $50 billion. Joseph Stalin, who was financed by the same money cartel, replaced Lenin as Russia's brutal new dictator. Using terror and death threats, Stalin's job was to industrialize Russia and turn communism into a powerful counterforce to democracy. Manufactured conflicts between these two powerful political forces would be the ideal excuse for all future wars and for dividing, conquering, and ruling the world. The Roaring Twenties was a decade of peace and prosperity in the United States.
Installment plans were created to make buying high-priced items more affordable. Instead of shelling out $100 for a new washing machine, consumers would put $5 down and pay $8 a month. The dangers of debt and high interest rates didn't enter the minds of most Americans, and shopping raged throughout the decade. Advertising became part of the fabric of American culture as ads dominated newspapers and magazines. Sex appeal, social snobbery, outrageous claims, and fabricated scientific studies convince consumers to buy more.
With massive corporate growth, high employment, and a post-war bull market on Wall Street, first-time American investors went on a stock market buying spree.
One wanted a piece of this prosperity. People bought stock on margin or credit for as little as 10% down. They then used the stock as collateral to borrow more money to buy more stock. Then they did it again. The market was a free-for-all with no regulations of any kind.
America's more affordable than ever. Just $19. Now you can get the all-new, powerful, strong, sexy, affordable, great, easy, new extreme. Simple, unrivaled, effective, special, no money down today.
How?
Whenever we wanted money.
Could this be America's future?
Really?
It could.
Cool.
Go to money.com and sign. Let's make the erratic money anywhere. Let's make money.
The party ended on October 29th, 1929, when the stock market crashed and caught everyone off guard, everyone except the banksters. J.P. Morgan and Kuhn & Loeb sent advance warnings to their group of insiders. These Federal Reserve pirates caused the crash by printing a whopping 62% inflation rate, then raising interest rates to an alarming 6%. While the Rothschilds, Warburgs, and other Federal Reserve pirates escaped the fallout, outsiders lost everything, some of them leaping to their death from office towers. 30 of the $80 billion that industrial stocks had been worth vanished into thin air, but thin air was just another name for the international banksters. Following the crash, the Great Depression put one-third of the U.S. workforce out of work. The bankster-owned banks foreclosed on property and took possession of people's homes and farms. When panicked citizens lined up at banks to withdraw their hard-earned savings, the banksters gave them only 10 cents on the dollar. Homeless and desperate, many Americans set up tent cities and rode the rails looking for work.
I went a-walking that ribbon of highway. I saw above me that inland skyway. Saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for me.
For me to be a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
We don't want to overlook the fact that this country was on the brink of hell. We were looking and searching for anything to get us out of this mess. Communism looked very, very attractive to people. I mean, we're going to share everything. I mean, you're not going to have to worry about being out of a job. We're going to be one great big happy family.
There was a lot of baloney, weren't, but that we believed it.
Either on the trains or in jungles, you do get to talking about what this means. In a broader sense, the social struggle. Why does it have to be this way when the goddamn guys on Wall Street all got millions of dollars? And I can remember being aware of the difference between the working class and the ruling class in this society, to put it in the terms that I use today.
The boys coming chanting and the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me.
Congressman Louis McFadden, chairman of the House Banking Committee, claimed the crash was planned by the international bankers who sought to become rulers of us all. In his famous 1932 congressional address, he said, "Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks. The Federal Reserve Board has cheated the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the national debt three times over. This evil institution has impoverished and ruined the people of the United States through the defects of the law which it operates and through the corrupt practices of the moneyed vultures who control it. Some people think the Federal Reserve Banks are government institutions. They are not government institutions. They are private credit monopolies which prey upon the people of the United States for the benefit of themselves." Following a series of death threats, McFadden died from food poisoning, followed by a heart attack under suspicious circumstances.
Now, some people have too much money. They wear it like a pair of pants. They say there's room for everybody, but you never get a chance. You can't ride that elevator. You can't climb those stairs. 'Cause those people have too much money up there. Now, some people have too much money, and they drive it around like a car. They never pick up hitchhikers unless they know who they are. They all belong to the same club and they all wear those rings. Those people have too much money, that's the thing. Too much money puts somebody under the bridge. You know it's like water. You scoop it up, the level goes down. And too much money can choke a gift horse. All you want is a drink, but you fall in and drown. You know that French lady meant well when she said they ought to just go eat cake crumbs. She had no idea where poverty came from. Silver spoons and glass slippers, you know, their minds are just a mess. Those people have too much money, I guess.
It is important to point out that regardless of the social system, whether fascist, socialist, capitalist, or communist, the underlying mechanism is still money, labor, and competition. Communist China is no less capitalistic than the United States. The only difference is the degree by which the state intervenes in enterprise. The reality is that monetaryism, so to speak, is the true mechanism that guides the interests of all the countries on the planet. The most aggressive and hence dominant variation of this monetarism is the free enterprise system. The fundamental perspective as put forth by early free market economists like Adam Smith is that self-interest in competition leads to social prosperity, as the act of competition creates incentive which motivates people to persevere. However, what isn't talked about is how a competition-based economy invariably leads to strategic corruption, power and wealth consolidation, social stratification, technological paralysis, labor abuse, and ultimately, a covert form of government dictatorship by the rich elite. The word corruption is often defined as moral perversion. If a company dumps toxic waste into the ocean to save money, most people recognize this as corrupt behavior. On a more subtle level, when Walmart moves into a small town and forces small businesses to shut down for they are unable to compete, a gray area emerges. For what exactly is Walmart doing wrong? Why should they care about mom-and-pop organizations they destroy? Yet, even more subtly, when a person gets fired from their job because a new machine has been created which can do the work for less money, people tend to just accept that as the way it is, not seeing the inherent corrupt inhumanity of such an action. Because the fact is, whether it is dumping toxic waste, having a monopoly enterprise, or downsizing the workforce, the motive is the same: profit. They are all different degrees of the same self-preserving mechanism, which always puts the well-being of people second to monetary gain. Therefore, corruption is not some byproduct of monetarism. It is the very foundation. And while most people acknowledge this tendency on one level or another, the majority remains naive as to the broad ramifications of having such a selfish mechanism as the guiding mentality in society.
The rich will strive to establish their dominion and enslave the rest. They always did. They always will.
Business, business everywhere runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this place really bursts. business, business everywhere. Babies use the word before they learn to walk the stairs. Anybody here say World Trade Organization? Perpetuating, exploiting peoples, tribes, and nations. Let's see if we can see how far back that business started. Long before the pharaohs and the day the sea was parted. When Moses led the slaves through the waves to be saved. But tell me, did things really change? Look around the world, the top to down, it's getting awful strange. Bad business getting poor people in a tizziness. Makes them want to blow up Babylon so high it's dizziness. Business at the center of the WTO. World Trade, what? Oh, WTC Center, you know, a disaster. Business making pollution grow faster. Made a crook of the doctor and the pastor. Took the president and made of him a bastard. And sells to you the rip-off rapper on your ghetto blaster. Who wants money first and justice second? I'm wrecking this. Throw the merchants out the church, they're begging for a king-size downfall. Beggars in the street because of y'all. Let it be known that dirty business made the world trade fall. Not terrorism, but businessism itself. Like the media putting war flicks on your shelf. A lot of wealth in your daily news and TV too. Papers, capers, congressmen are just escapers, it's true. Yeah, oh, while the refugees go do 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 do. Business, business everywhere. Learns the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare. All these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face. Profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in the hearth. Before this place really bursts. Maybe I can put this differently. The new world order's gonna get hurt just by being me. Cause I ain't seen nothing but hype, no controversy. And so it looks like this time it might have to be me. So, yeah, confidentially, it's my personal business how the rocks are gets fame. Exploiting poor folks to get rich, so tell me who's to blame. Shame on you, you poser, wake up, party's over. Killed a Land Rover, army buggy, sold the world over. Yeah, the world is soon to be over. The way this here deal's going down, that's why it's my personal business how the Bush and Cheney families been doing business with the Hussein Laden families and getting fights when things don't go quite right, you see, and whip up wars when they need profits for the military. The chickens already came home to roost. The cat is out the bag with tea shopping on the truth. But even if the dirty businessmen get their wars, the truth's been told and will be known and grown forevermore. So if anybody doubts, look how Nero's remembered. Every lie finally leads to time and God surrenders. Yeah, while the refugees go do 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 do. Business, business everywhere. Runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare. All these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face. Profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse. Before this whole wide world bursts.
We're Consolidated International, and we might be looking for you. Are you one of those people who show up, punch in, pitch in, put out, clean up, punch out, head home, throw up, turn in, sack out, and shut up? That's what we need. People we can keep in line. We may have a place for you. Consolidated International. People making things so people have things to do things to other people with. And thinking up more things to do with the stuff we have.
When the land of the free turned out to be nothing but a free-for-all. If you got big dough, you're freer than most, cause your freedom goes up with the size of your bankroll. You can buy a judge or a bribe or a thug or a bomb or a shredding machine. You can buy your way through Intune on to any ticket or TV screen. It's a money disease. It's a thing called greed. And it feeds on those who need the money most in Moneyland. Oh, it ain't so funny if you ain't got the money in Moneyland.
I just bought one of these yesterday, and it doesn't fit my consumer, and the store doesn't have any of the other kind.
For more enjoyment and greater efficiency, consumption is being standardized.